understand you.
Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way every Sunday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. We come your way also Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We encourage you to also click on the link to our guests, which we have on that page, as well as on the schedules page prior to the broadcast. And we encourage you to check out the information and see how it resonates with you. And if it does, certainly I would encourage you to continue to investigate and then and follow up, maybe do some continuing research, and who knows where it would lead you. You never can tell with the various choices that are out there. We're trying to expose you to more. This is, I want to call this an educational process. I think it is, and I'm learning an immense amount as well, so I hope you are as well. I thought long and hard about how to start this program, aside from the usual, and I like the idea of basically telling you that there is a hostage situation that has been ongoing for as long as you have been alive. And our guest is going to talk to us about it and how you can free yourself from this hostage situation. What am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about how our own emotions, those very things that are within each one of us that are supposed to be working in concert, sometimes are not, and they're keeping us from moving forward in our lives, from achieving the things that we want to achieve, doing and being who we truly are. I love the way one of our guests put it, not only being who we really are, but remembering what we've always been. So I hope that you will stay with us here on the program, because I think that it's going to be a fascinating program. We're going to be talking today with a woman who is involved with a lot of different aspects of what we're going to talk about. One of them has to do with, again, continuing education. And I love this in terms of the type of school that this is. I know that many years ago, the subject of metaphysics was being introduced into post-secondary education. Well, now there are actually universities. There are actually institutions of higher learning that are exclusively and solely dedicated to that very subject. And of course, I looked up the definition of the word metaphysics or metaphysical, and having to do with that which is beyond the physical. Now, that's just a rudimentary definition. But my guest today is a part of that university, but she's also a part of the Emotional Freedom Techniques program, if you will. It's a course, online course, that where you can become certified in EFT, 100% online course. We encourage you to check it out. We'll give you the websites here shortly. Deborah Lindsay, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Richard. It sounds like you've really done your homework. That's impressive.
Well, thank you. I find it interesting that this whole aspect of freeing ourselves from our emotions, some people, they tend to get the wrong, they come to the wrong conclusion. Because, for example, when we hear about, for example, meditation, mm-hmm. and when meditation first started coming out slowly into the mainstream, one of the things that you were always told as far as meditation was you wanted to, you know, quiet the mind. You wanted to almost push it aside, or if you could get rid of it for that period of time, you would do that. Well, the more that we've gone on in time, the more we're hearing that you need to, in a manner of speaking, make peace with, make friends of the mind, so that maybe sort of like a bringing a child in tow, because sometimes that's how our mind, you've heard the phrase monkey mind, we need to befriend it and make it a part of the process, and saying, look, I'm not wanting to cut you off, I'm not wanting to ignore you, but I need this time, you know, sort of almost negotiating, in a manner of speaking, with our own minds to allow us to connect with that higher self of who and what we really are. Are our emotions sort of along those same lines here?
Well, I think the thing is that the emotions have been ignored for so long as sort of the second class citizen. You know, nobody even really considers them in the equation, do they? When you're talking about your own health, you talk about your physical health, you talk about your mental health, you even talk about your spiritual health. But nobody ever really considers emotions in that equation, and yet the emotions are the thing that make us inherently human. You know, the emotions are the thing that make life worth living. You know, I actually had a roommate one time. This might be an inappropriate thing to talk about, but I had a roommate one time who was set on eliminating all emotions. He was completely on a path of only being logical and being physical. So he worked out all the time. He went to school and classes or whatever. He ended up committing suicide because without emotions, what makes life even worth living? But that being said, emotions rule us because we as a society have never really taken the time to examine emotions and to heal our emotions. And as a result, we have an addiction problem that's completely out of control. We have anxiety problems that are completely out of control. And we have physical health. And people don't think that physical health is emotional, but it very much is. I mean, I don't know about you, but remember when you were a kid, if you didn't want to go to school that day and you would tell your mom, "Oh, mom, I don't feel good." And she would kind of buy into it and let you take the day off school.
Yeah,
then
you
make yourself sick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by 9:30, you were fine.
Right. Well, in my case, I would feel so guilty about having lied to my mother that I would end up making myself sick and be in bed for the day, you know?
So you were really sick, yeah.
But
just
emotions
guilt,
do
yeah.
make us sick. Emotions are the essence of life. It's energy in motion. And if we can't honor our emotions and pay attention to our emotions and, like you said, learn how to herd our emotions like we do our thoughts, they will run amok and you will experience something like anxiety or addictions or physical illness and autoimmune diseases. I mean, nobody ever talks about the fact that autoimmune diseases are almost entirely emotional.
And that sort of leads us, though, I'm not going to go there just yet, but that will also take us into the whole aspect of metaphysics and then, of course, the International Metaphysics University as well, as we'll talk about in a little bit. But you're absolutely right from that standpoint. And what's interesting from my perspective is that this whole aspect of people wanting to, so to speak, divorce themselves of their emotions. Well, you know, there is a science fiction character or species called the Vulcans who tried that, and it's not real successful. As the caricature goes, as the fictional history goes, they struggle with it all the way through the 23rd, 24th centuries. So it's not something that we can, I mean, it, as you said, it is a part of who we are. It's like denying my left arm.
Right.
It's like, no,
one of the greatest gifts of being human.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine a world where you couldn't feel anything, you know? Imagine a world where you couldn't have the joy of a good laugh or the feeling of being in love or even the feeling of being sad or hurt. You know, those emotions are on the two opposite ends of the spectrum, but they're all so essentially important to the experience of being human.
Now, let's talk a little bit about, in that regard, in terms of the expression of those emotions, or maybe I need to go a little bit further than that, and the outward manifestation. Now, obviously, when one is happy and, you know, and so forth, there might be laughter. That's a physical response, if you will. Sadness is tears, potentially, and so forth. But there are some emotions that we experience that, for some of us, and especially the male of the species, we feel compelled to physically express the more aggressive emotions, like anger, and sometimes even fear, in a very physical way, and we're told that that's inappropriate, that we shouldn't do that. Right. And what I'm trying to get to is finding the appropriate physical outlet for those kinds of emotions so that that doesn't blow up into something that we as a society end up having to deal with down the road when we hear these different news stories about individuals who that or taking a murder-suicide of an entire family or and so on and so on and so on. Because I know that there are a lot of guys who are listening who, if they have a significant other, be it a girlfriend or wife, what have you, or even a mother, when they got angry or get angry and they start to stomp their feet, okay, they're told, stop it. That's inappropriate, you know, and so forth. Well, how are we supposed to express those types of things? I think this is part of this leads directly into what you're talking about in terms of the physical distress and dis-ease that we create because we can't there's no outlet.
Right. It's valid. I think, yeah, and I think that's, you know, I don't know that I have an answer for that, you know. I mean, sports seems like the mm-hmm. obvious choice to me, the obvious answer to express all that energy.
Okay.
But the thing is where it comes to, when it shows up at my door, you know, as a EFT professional, emotional freedom technique professional, is when it becomes so either chronic, you know, people who have been angry, they have an angry reaction to absolutely everything that happens in their life now, which is really, it's really just hurt, right? It's just they don't know how to manage hurt. Hurt becomes anger. Anger becomes their way of expressing hurt or powerlessness. You know, anger becomes a way of trying to feel powerful again in a situation where you feel powerless. But the problem for me isn't how to express it. That's really more of a cultural issue. My problem is, the issue is when it becomes chronic, when it becomes unmanaged, when it becomes stored in the body in such a way is that you might go out and, you know, take out the people at the post office. And that's where EFT comes in, so that it gives you a way of actually managing those emotions in a way that you can balance them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know if that answers your question.
It actually does. It addresses it certainly well enough at this particular point. And it also leads us into the process that you are teaching people, the EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique. And we want to talk a little bit about that here, here on Tell Me Your Story. We're talking with Deborah Lindsay. And give us a little bit more of a lowdown, if you will, on yourself as far as the website in particular that we are going to direct people to, which is the onlineeftcertification.com. That's onlineeftcertification.com. Tell us about your role in this this coursework.
Well, I put it together. You know, I'm the instructor and the certifying. You know, I'm a certifying instructor, so I guide through people through the process. There's both a level one and a level two. Now, for most of your listeners, the level one course might be something that interests them because it's really a course in self-healing. So one of the things that I've noticed as we go, you know, as I go along is that most people don't have any idea how to heal their own emotions. And if they, you know, if they need help, they end up going to a physical doctor because it's already manifested into some kind of pain or physical ailment, or they go to a mental health doctor thinking that their emotions, that these emotional issues are actually mental issues. They're not. Mental illness is very different from emotional distress. And or they end up going to a spiritual doctor, you know, you call them a priest or a rabbi or whatever, looking for spiritual guidance. Of course, all of those things are valuable. But to really learn how to heal or manage or balance is probably a better word. Your own emotions is such a powerful tool to have in your tool belt, especially for anybody experiencing addictions, for anybody experiencing experiencing anxiety or PTSD or who's having panic attacks. My God, you know, medicine only goes so far. Psychiatrists are, you know, there's some help, but it's not fixing it, you know. So to learn how to heal your own emotions, to understand that emotions are just energy in motion and that you have to learn how to get them. Like what happens is people have traumas, right? So you have a traumatic experience and then that will put the emotion into sort of a loop, right? So let's say you have a traumatic experience of sexual abuse as a kid. And that's huge. You know, I can't tell you the hundreds of people that have sat down in front of me over the years that have experienced some kind of sexual trauma as in their life, usually as children, which just puts their whole life on hold, you know? For instance, recently I worked with a young man, he's in his early 30s, who when he was 7 years old, he met a young boy who was older than him at the time, 13. And the older boy the young boy liked having this older boy as a friend. And as a result of that, he entered into a sexual relationship with him. And it ended up destroying his whole life, right? So mm-hmm. Here he is now. He's 30, 32, 33 years old. And this experience happened to him when he was 7. And here it is, 20 plus years later, and he still thinks about it and talks about it every day. He can't function in the world. He can't get a job. He can't get a girlfriend. He can't move out of his parents' house because of a sexual experience that was labeled abuse when he was 7 years old. And what he said was, my parents are so tired of me talking about it, right? So he would go and he would go to the place where this man now worked, an adult man with a family and children, and he would sit outside and look at him 20 plus years later. Now, he's been to every psychologist in the world. He's taken every pill in the world and nothing has fixed it. You know, it sits there because it sits in a traumatic loop in his system and he cannot move past that traumatic loop. So his life has been destroyed. So we get on Skype. I do my sessions on Skype. And we began working together. In the course of 1 hour of tapping, that's EFT is tapping.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you tap on the energy system of the body, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the energy system is where these emotions flow. So, you know, ask a doctor, they don't know where emotions are. They've looked at every nook and cranny of the brain. Well, it runs in the energy system of your body. And so in 1 hour of tapping with him, it was like magic. You know, at the end of it, the thing that really struck me was earlier he said, my parents are so tired of me talking about it. At the end of the session, he said, I'm so tired of talking about it. And that's when I knew we had finally moved that energy through his system. Now, I have not checked back in with him. I will talk with him again soon. But because I have almost 16 years of experience with this now, I can tell you that the next time I see him, his life will have changed. I already know it because I've done this for 16 years and I've seen what these traumatic experiences that happen in our lives, and these traumatic experiences can be sexual experiences. They can be having parents who were not really equipped to be parents. And so they were mean or they said something traumatic to you. You know, I had a student yesterday in my class who was talking about her alcoholic father and how one day she took off from work or took off from school to study for a test and her alcoholic father, with her very weak mother standing behind her, berated her for several hours. And so she was never able to go back to school after that.
Mm.
And another student who got caught smoking a cigarette by a teacher and berated her in front of the entire class. and how these simple experiences that we should, we think, be able to encapsulate into a moment in time and put them behind us and move on, become life-defining. And they become life-defining because they get caught in a loop in the energy system. And that energy system, we don't know how, at this point in history, until EFT, until tapping, we as humans did not know how to fix that loop of trauma that runs around in our system that creates these blockages to living our lives fully, that creates illnesses, that creates mental illnesses. When you clear those out with tapping, it's miraculous. Now, I don't want to overstate it, but it's true. It's like that. And I myself used to get anxiety so profoundly. I owned a business at the time, and my mother had had anxiety, and I just adopted her habits. And so I had a business. I was working in the music industry at the time, actually. And I had five people working for me, and we were in one sizable room. And it got to the place where I was so worried and stressed all the time about making sure that everybody had enough money to survive, that there was enough this or that to take care of all these people, that I remember the phone would ring sometimes and it would be somebody that I just couldn't talk to, and I would crawl under the desk. I had a little, you know, it was a big government-sized desk, and it had this cubby hole underneath of it. And I would crawl under my desk, like into fetal position, just to be able to get through a traumatic experience. Thank God I found EFT. Because EFT then gave me a tool by which I could heal myself. And as a result, I've gone on to start the university. I have gone on, you know, I had a healing center for 12 years, teaching people what I learned, not just EFT, but all kinds of other protocols, but EFT being, to me, the most elegant, the most profound, and the most useful. So anyway, because of that, because of EFT, I have been able to live a really spectacular life. You know, I travel the world, I teach, I do what makes my soul sing, and I attribute that all to the power of tapping. Because otherwise I would be medicated right now in my house trying to figure out how to solve these problems. So anyway, coming back to the course, the level one course is really a course in healing yourself. And it teaches you the tapping technique. It teaches you all of the various, well, there's all kinds of protocols that are within that to teach you how to manage different kinds of illnesses or whatever. But in that simple little course, in a couple of weeks, you are going to learn the techniques to heal your own self. And you'll also know enough to help your neighbors or to help your kids or to help your family members or friends. It then goes on to level two. And the level two now takes you into practitioner training. So by that point, you're learning how to work as a professional with other people. Now, it's a very hands-on, very tactile course, even though it's online. You do a lot of tapping with other students. You do a lot of tapping with people in your community, so that by the time you graduate the course, you have an actual skill set that you can then go out and work with people and start a business if you want. I train a lot of psychologists. I train a lot of coaches, but I also train lay people, just an average person on the street who is looking for answers in their own life, who then become so passionate about helping themselves that they want to go out and help others and start a practice doing it. You know, you don't have to go to 4 years or 6 years or 8 years of college to help people. You can learn it in this, you know, basically a 12-week course. It's online, so you take however much time you want. Mm-hmm. I have students to stay in the course for a year because they don't want to graduate, and I have people that finish it in less time. It's up to the student. But then to be able to go out and start a practice of their own, helping people and making really good money. I mean, it's really very common for people to make $100 or $150 an hour doing EFT because the results are so profound that it can compete head-on-head or one-on-one, head-to-head with psychologists and psychiatrists in that way, because the results are so rapid, so deep, and so profound.
Well, we have certainly featured EFT on this program back in the early days. We've been doing this program for over 9 years, and we've talked with the various people involved with the EFT website specifically, but also other folks down through the years who they're very familiar with it. They understand that it works, even if we don't understand exactly how. We know the technique. That's not an issue. The whole tapping method, the sequence, and so forth.
That's, we know how.
But I'm sure you do. But it kind of comes down to, and I've always used Chinese medicine as the example. It's been around for 5,000 years. There was no FDA 5,000 years ago. They just knew that it works. Whether they understood, and they probably did understand how, but even if they didn't understand exactly how, they just knew that it worked.
Right.
And from what you've described and from what I've experienced and from all of the folks that I have spoken with, it works. It just works. And if you're interested... You can go to onlineeftcertification.com. That's onlineeftcertification.com, and you can get in touch with Deborah and the website and the certification. It's also accredited. There's accredited EFT certification, and so we encourage you to check that out. When we come back, I want to talk about probably one of my favorite subjects, and that is metaphysics. We're going to do that as we continue talking with Deborah Lindsay, who, by the way, also is the president of the International Metaphysical University. So we're going to change hats just a little bit. So stay right where you are. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, along with Deborah Lindsay, and she is the president of the International Metaphysical University. And that website, by the way, is intermetu.com. And we'll give that out again. We'll also be linked to that particular website as well. So we encourage you to investigate it, check it out. And I think that it will benefit you greatly. Deborah, one of the aspects of metaphysics as I was introduced to it back some, 40 years ago. And I'd like to consider myself a young 56. My first real official introduction was through a book called Autobiography of a Yogi that I refer to as my metaphysical primer. Mm-hmm. And I worked, of course, for 15 years in this industry for a Christian radio station. And I was asking questions that you can be burned at the stake for 500 years ago. But I even said that, look, you're going to label me a heretic? Fine, just go ahead and blazon a big H on my forehead. I'll wear it proudly, because I was having real problems with some of the answers that I was being given as to the questions I was being asked, or that I was asking. And, of course, then I went to Webster's, and I said, what does that word mean, metaphysics, metaphysical, beyond the physical? Well, gee, I guess Christianity is metaphysical, because...
Yes,
according to all the teachings that I've read, and I've read the Bible from front to back, you know, it all talks about the next life, the next world. Yeah, it talks about living in this world, but in preparation for, and so on and so forth. And that's beyond the physical. It has nothing to do with the material world. It has to do with the spirit world and heaven and all of these different things.
Right.
But so do so many other, and I like to, these days I use the word philosophy. There are so many philosophies that have come and gone, and some that have managed to stick around for quite some time, sometimes beyond their usefulness, if you will, to mankind. But they talk about the same thing. And so I'm curious as to this university, the International Metaphysical University, where did you start in terms of not just so much creating the curriculum, but even, for example, the whole reason for even creating the university, as far as your, what's called, your foundation.
Right. Well, you know, I went through an awakening myself back in 1999, 2000. I think many of us have been through it. And after that, I just had an insatiable desire for knowledge. And so it was about this time that I started studying different holistic modalities and where I learned EFT. And I went on to start a holistic healthcare center. But I was so obsessed with my spirituality at the time, metaphysics, and just really trying to understand everything. I was reading every book I could get my hands on. I couldn't think about or talk about anything else. And I was getting all of these downloads at the time. I don't know if that makes any sense to you or your viewers.
Oh, yes,
but
very much so, yeah.
It was just like I would sit there and information would just come pouring into me. And I couldn't even function at the time. I was working a day job even. And I would have to excuse myself and go to the bathroom a couple of times a day and just sit there and let all this information come in. So when I started the center, I was really doing just holistic healthcare, but it wasn't long before we started doing a Sunday service. I had moved from Washington, D.C., where I was involved in a metaphysical church at the time, to West Virginia, and we started this Sunday service, and I found myself having to get up there and teach. And I felt like a complete, you know, fraud and neophyte. I didn't know what I was doing, but I needed it for myself, so I did it for others. And that turned into workshops. And then I started bringing in other teachers. So we were bringing in outside teachers, and I started teaching myself. And so it became really a spiritual development center, which include everything from, you know, from straight up consciousness to channeling and psychic work to, you know, astrology. And I was already reading palms at the time. And we were studying the paranormal with ghosts and those sorts of things. And then, of course, shamanism came into it. And from shamanism, we eventually moved into UFOs. And, you know, I was always a little uncomfortable with the ufology program. I thought it might scare people off. But what I have found is that it's such a provocative and valuable program. So that people really, you know, the sort of more awake one becomes, the more one digs into the whole thing, the more the UFO thing sort of comes into play. For most people, it's not first. But anyway, so I had that center from 2000 until 2009. And at the time, what had happened was it really disturbed me that people were coming there all the time and having all of this education, but they couldn't get any kind of credentialing for it. So I started really looking at the idea of some kind of a university. So we had a meeting about it, probably 2005, 2006. But at the time, online schools didn't exist. And we were talking about, you know, getting the money for a building and being, you know, people traveling long distances. It just wasn't viable. And so I remember after that meeting that night, I came home. I was sitting in front of my computer and I literally just looked up at the sky and I said, "Listen, God, I know you want me to do this, but I don't know how." And I said, "I can't, quote, push this puppy uphill by myself. So if you want me to start a university, you bring me everything I need and I'll follow." So that was like 2005, 2006. In 2009, we were offering a Reiki course at the center. And afterwards, this woman was sitting there waiting for her husband to pick her up, and I was sitting there talking with her. And she said, you know, I could put this class online for you. I didn't even know what that meant. Online colleges were brand new. I know Phoenix University existed, but I had never really heard of it. And she said, my brother and I create online colleges. That's what we do. And I think this could be an online school. And I knew in that minute, having remembered my conversation or my directive to God of many years earlier, that this was important. So I set up a meeting with him and or with them. It ended up being predominantly the brother. She was the technical person. He was running sort of the operations. And we had a meeting. And at the end of that meeting, we had an arrangement. And we, so I called up the most spectacular people that I know in the industry of metaphysics, many of whom were my friends, whom I loved. And we started having meetings. We called them summits. And we created a curriculum. So I had people, I had someone in charge of the consciousness studies program. I had someone in charge of shamanic studies, someone in charge of paranormal, someone in charge of psychic development, someone in charge of shamanism, and someone in charge of ufology. And I had this, the most spectacular team. And in 9 months, we put together the school. It started in 9 months. Now, we had growing pains, we had problems, we had things that shook it out, and what we started with is not what it ended up being. But that's how life works sometimes. Things shed, and in the shedding, you find the core. And that's where we are right now. IMU has a core program. It's a master's and a PhD, and it's really a create your own program right now. You come in and you have one required course, which is the principles of metaphysics. And after that, people create their own programs. But it was really designed, I like to think of it as a mission from God, but it was solving the problem of all of these people who were doing all of this work, who weren't getting any recognition for it. No credibility, you know. We wanted it to be the first mainstream accredited metaphysical university, and my business partner at the time, he was an expert in accreditation. We still have a person on our team who's an expert in accreditation. But what we found along the way was that there's a reason why no one else has done it. And basically, what it does is it gives the government a say over your curriculum. And it became very clear early on that in order to get mainstream accreditation, which we desperately wanted, we would have to give up our psychic development program, we would have to give up the UFO program, and they would be able to decide what courses we could offer, what courses we couldn't offer. And it also meant the price was going to be so high that we ultimately decided that it was better to remain non-accredited. It's still something I struggle with, but it's really the right answer for us. So we're a non-accredited university that gives us freedom to teach true content the way we want to teach it. It keeps us, I think, legitimate in terms of our metaphysical credentials, but it does hurt in terms of mainstream credentialing. That's just the reality of it.
Sure.
So, does that answer? That's a long answer to a short question.
No, that's fine. I think that one of the aspects of all of this is the fact that you are willing to, you know, put yourself out there in that regard. And sometimes, and this is something that's been rather interesting as I've discovered over the years of doing this program as well as others for nearly 40 years, is that I heard it put this way in terms of what we're trying to do here on this program is look for those new ways of living. And I think that in one aspect, through metaphysics, through the spiritual arts and so forth, the ancient wisdom teachings, The process is not about tearing down the old institutions and foundations, not tearing them down to build new ones. I love that this was actually the way it was described to me. It says, that's not what you want to do. What you want to do, and I think you've done that in one sense through both of these efforts that you have going between the university as well as the EFT online certification, you build a better alternative that makes the old ways of doing things obsolete. Now, we can look at prime examples in our own lifetime, Deborah, of the various things that have been created to make the older things obsolete. I mean, in my own business, I've gone from reel-to-reels and carts and vinyl through cassettes into CDs, and now it's all digital. It's all online transfer. So what it's done is it's made, in a manner of speaking, it has made reel-to-reel cassettes and vinyls obsolete, even though they haven't completely died out. There are some people who really like that stuff, and I'm one of them. But at the same time, we still use the new technologies. Right. So I think that through this process, you are creating new foundations through new, and I use this in a broad term, new institutions of higher learning that will make the old institutions obsolete, and eventually they'll go by the wayside because nobody's going to be using them.
I think mainstream education is going through a massive transition right now, even though most people don't recognize it yet.
Yeah. And I tell you, it really needs to in a big way.
It needs to, and it's going to.
Yeah.
I remember one of the things that happened as a result of all this was that I got the opportunity to, because everything I do is online, I get the sort of spectacular opportunity to travel the world while I work. A few years ago, I was in Greece, and I got invited to this play of Socrates. It was a one-man play of Socrates in this ancient theater sitting underneath the Acropolis. It was really a most, spectacular night, this outdoor play. After the play, they had a discussion, the people that were there talking, and it really very quickly veered into metaphysics. And the question that was proposed was, how do we fix the world? That became a very broad subject, but it was really, it was a philosophical discussion. It was to me fascinating. That's the kind of thing that really rocks my world. But what was most interesting to me, and normally I'm someone who gets to talk a lot, but there was a lot of people, so I had to do a lot of listening that night. And the thing that fascinated me was that the answer they came up with as the answer to fixing the world was metaphysical education. And at the time, I was really struggling with IMU, trying to figure out, what direction to go and what we should be doing with it. And it was like a lightning bolt came down, reminding me that what we're doing matters and that we are creating a template for a new world. But more than that, we're giving other people the information that they need. Like, people go to school and they learn how to be an accountant so that they can learn a skill set to do something that affects their life in some way, hopefully affects the world in some way. But metaphysics, it's the next level, right? Like, mm-hmm. You're changing yourself, and through that content, through that information, through that awareness, just having that within you changes the world. But taking that information out into the world and teaching others and showing others a new way, that's going to be, I think, the primary avenue through which we transform the world. And that's why I do what I do. And that's why it matters. Taking the courses, learning how to see through the veil into the unseen world, all of that matters. Now, you talked earlier about Christianity. And one of the things that fascinates me is how rabidly the Christian world can decry our efforts. When really, you know, the Christian Bible, I'm not as familiar with the other books out there, because this is how I was raised, was in the Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
Has more than 13,000 metaphysical references of angels coming down and talking to people, of channeled information, of bilocation, of bringing people back from the dead, of holistic healing. All of those things are found in there. And I think that the information that's coded within religion, if you take it outside of the dogma, if you take it outside of the fear, because any religion that's teaching fear as a reason to love doesn't make any sense to me.
Hear, hear.
But if you take it outside of those constraints, you find that we're all on the same page and we're all heading in the same direction. And all of the religions have within encoded within them these same spiritual principles that are teaching us the way back to wholeness.
Yeah.
And oneness.
Yeah.
And that's really what we're trying to do.
I remember coming to the realization that a lot of these old one- and two-sentence nursery rhymes of sorts that you used to hear as a kid growing up, and we were told that these were true. And I have since found that they're false. They're lies. One of them is, sticks and stones will break your bones, but words will never hurt you.
Very much
not
a lie.
True. The other one I found so fascinating when I discovered that that one was also a lie was, you can't change other people. Now, usually I have to explain what I mean by that. How is that a lie? It's what you just described. The moment I change myself, I change the people around me, because they have to relate to me in that change I have made. And either they're going to draw closer and want to know more, or they're going to run out of fear. Oh, my God, I got to get away from this guy as fast as I can.
But both of these things really come down to a basic metaphysical principle, which is a principle of vibration.
Yes.
Right? Sticks and stones might break my bone, but words are vibration.
Yes.
And the Bible itself says, in the beginning there was the Word. And really what they're talking about is the vibration that creates all things. That's emotion. You know, emotion is vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And when you emit an emotion, when you emit an energy, you vibrate out into the world, and then like attracts like. We all, you know, everybody by now, I think, knows about law of attraction. Certainly in the metaphysical community, it's kind of commonplace. But I guess in the rest of the world, it's still kind of new information. But yeah, I mean, yes. I remember when I had my healing center, people used to say all the time, they would get there sometimes before me, and I never locked my door. So they could just go in and sit down and be present, meditate, read a book, whatever they wanted to do. But people used to always say that they would go there sometimes just to sit, because being in the space had then become a healing place. With all of the work that we did there, all of the healing work, all of the spiritual work, all the work that we did, the vibration in the center itself had become healing. So as we heal ourselves, we heal the world around us. It's true.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I don't know if I agree with changing people.
I think it's not something that you do consciously. You can't. Now, I will, again, I have to explain that you cannot change people consciously. But
right.
You do it through changing yourself. And that's why I say that that one is a lie, because we do. And again, it goes back to what you just said about, you know, the vibrational aspect. And you also said something very important in terms of how words have power. And this
right.
is what has always frustrated me, as we have just gone through an unbelievable election cycle. And I remember about 15, 20 years ago in observing what was going on. And I would say to the people that would listen, says, I don't understand how they can say these things about one another, say, through the primaries. They just bash each other and verbally abuse one another. And then when the election's over and each side has selected their general election candidates, they say, OK, now let's all join together, join hands and sing Kumbaya. Let's move forward to defeat them. And then we go through the general election process. And again, this is on whatever level, whatever national, state, local, whatever level you want to talk. Then we do the same thing all over again in the general election. And then when it's all over and a single person has been selected, we all say, OK, now let's all join hands, sing Kumbaya. Let's move forward to make a better world. It's like, how can you do that? The things that you said about these people, they don't go away. It's, oh, hey, wait a minute. No. This is their explanation. It's just politics. And I'm sitting here going, no, it's not. Right. And to me, this is one of the prime reasons why we had such agitation amongst the citizenry. And I'm going to use that in a kind way, because over the decades, the level of disenfranchisement. I mean, how would you feel, Deborah, if when this whole thing starts out and you select someone, I'm really for this person and I'm going to do everything I can to get this person elected through the primary and then the general and so forth. And boy, this is going to be great. And then your person loses. And now you're being asked to support somebody else. And you do it grudgingly because you don't really believe in that person. You wanted the other guy. And the process continues on. And you have, who knows how many different people that may be running for that given office. And there are people who wanted those other people to win, but they didn't. And now they feel like, I don't have anybody who is speaking for me in terms of, what I believe and so on and so forth. So now they have nobody within the system to go to and so forth. And so there you have the disenfranchised feeling.
Well, I think part of it, too, is recognizing that, listen, there's some things going on in our world that are upside down and backwards.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things that are upside down and backwards. Medicine is upside down and backwards. Law is upside down and backwards. Politics is upside down and backwards. Money is upside down and backwards. These things have become almost, not even almost, we perceive them as normal.
Yes.
But it's kind of like when you don't have any money in your bank account and so they charge you more. It's backwards. And the political system is just one more indication of that backwardness. Now, I don't even think I can have this conversation on air because I'll lose all credibility.
So. Well, let me stop you. Let me stop you there. Pardon me. Let me stop you there to address this from a little different perspective. When you talk about these different, and I like to use the term institutions, being upside down and backwards, it doesn't matter which one you list, okay? And I'm trying to pull your feet away from the fire a little bit here.
Thanks.
How does the Institute for Metaphysical, how does the International Metaphysical University, how does it address these concepts? And I'm going to use that to, again, broaden it. From a metaphysical perspective, how does your university teach people to, I don't know if I want to use the word cope, because to me it sounds like, okay, you'll use the EFT for coping, a coping mechanism, okay, so you can continue to move forward. But then
it's
you
not
need,
coping.
But then you need tools.
It's leading.
Okay.
It's leading.
All right.
It's not coping, it's leading.
It's leading. But then you need tools to be able to begin the process as an individual and then in groups and so forth to build the kind of world that we want. How does the university facilitate that?
Because it gives... Well, I mean, it depends on which classes you're taking, but, it gives people, what is it they call the scales from your eyes? Like, it removes the scales from your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you, we have techniques and skills that you can use. I think that it comes back, Richard, to what you were just saying, how your vibration affects the world. So we bring people into the university, and one course after another is life transforming. I don't think we have a single course at the university that at the end of it, people don't come back to me and say, holy crap, how did I not know that? How did I live my life without this information? And so as they take, you know, 12, 18 courses and the shackles are removed from their eyes and they are awakened to a new quality of world, they become the leaders that pull us forward into the next generation, into the next age, mm-hmm. into the, you know, we can call it the age of Aquarius or whatever we want to call it. But, you know, that awakening of each individual is working towards a critical mass so that no longer these upside down and backwards, you know, you can see it on Facebook, right? Like, I don't know if everybody else's Facebook feed is the same as mine, but you can see people raging outwardly against vaccines. You can see people raging outwardly against the medical industrial complex, against Monsanto and GMO foods, and people are exposing these things one day at a time, one post at a time, one conversation at a time. We're exposing a media that's no longer filled with critical thinkers, but propaganda. And as each person wakens up, as each person awakens, each person carries that vibration out into the world that then eventually congeals until we have enough of us that the upside down backwards world has to come into alignment. And we can get somebody in a position of leadership in our community and within our world who is a legitimately good person and someone that we can all love and respect, even if we don't necessarily agree with all of the policies,
mm-hmm.
Because it feels honest and true. That's what we're working towards, I think, and that's what IMU ultimately does.
No, I do understand, and it's very difficult for us to take a. I mean, I've been around a scant 56 years. My dad just turned 85, and you know, and I've chatted with he and my mother. I had an opportunity to interview them a year and a half ago on this program, and
nice.
It was really not only a lot of fun but also very enlightening as well.
Yes,
to hear that here's a couple that gives a damn, and rather than going out and fighting in the streets or in the courtroom or at a convention or what have you, the way they made a difference was to raise a family of individuals to go out, so to speak, and make a difference. That's how they made a difference.
With the level of consciousness that they had at the time.
Yeah.
And that your level of consciousness, because the frequency of the, you know, because the vibrations have changed in that time, your frequency be affected the time that you live, if that makes any sense.
Yes. Yes, it does. Absolutely.
I love that idea of interviewing your parents. I think one of the things that I like about my age, and I'm similar in age to you, is that I like the fact that I can look back over time, and I can remember a time before computers. I can remember a time when privacy was real. I can, you know, remember, you know, all of that world. I remember that world, and I have all of that embodied within me. And I can only imagine what older people have within them. You know, if they're 35 years older, what did they see? You know?
Yeah.
What did they experience and know that we could learn from? I mean, that could be a great program or 20 programs. I've often thought, you know, we should have a television show based in a nursing home. So you can just really learn what every person laying there in that bed has learned over a lifetime.
Well, you talk about things being upside down and backwards. That's an institution in our country specifically, because the rest of the world treats their elderly I think, with a hell of a lot more respect and dignity than we do in this country. We throw them away, and that is not... I still go to my parents for advice on occasion. I mean, my God, right. They, like you say, they're 30 years older than I am. They've seen a few more things, and they can certainly assist in maybe, you know, not telling me what to do, but giving me some advice and some counsel that might help. I don't have to take it, but at least... To me, the biggest part is at least taking it in. I mean, and that's another aspect, too, that I love about doing this program and people who tune in maybe for the first time. And I used to give this warning at the end of the program, and I stopped giving it as a warning. But I just, you know, it's just sort of a concept that came to mind. And that is, once you've heard something, once you've seen something, once you've read something, once you've experienced something, you can't un it. You can't unknow it. You can't unknow it. So when people listen to this program for the first time and they get to the end of it, it's too late. You've already heard it. Now you have to deal with it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but someday it's going to creep back into your consciousness in spite of what your beliefs are today. And it's going to tug at you and ask you to deal with it. I remember a conversation I had with my eldest sister many years ago. It was right around Thanksgiving, and it was all around religion and doctrine and these kinds of things. And she was at that time very, very stalwart in her position in the philosophy that she had espoused to at that time, right, with her husband. And the thing was, we were raised in a very liberal Roman Catholic upbringing. And I remember telling her, because she was challenging me on my position, on my beliefs and so forth, I said, well, hey, wait a minute. You know, my beliefs of today are not my beliefs of tomorrow. Of yesterday are not of today. Today are not of tomorrow, because I'm always learning and experiencing, and I don't know what I'm going to come across. Right. And for me, then, in turn, to do anything to disavow your experiences, to me, that's a sin. That if you say, hey, this is the experience that I had, who am I to say otherwise?
Right.
I might ask you a lot of questions about it because I might be curious, but to undermine you and to belittle you and say, no, it doesn't say it in the book, so you couldn't have had that experience. Really?
Right.
Okay.
Well, one of the things I've learned is that I've been wrong a lot.
Hear, hear, me too.
That's the best thing ever.
Yeah. I think we learned so much from that.
Without being willing to recognize when I'm, you know, it's wrong is only an opportunity to learn something new.
Yeah.
And to change, you know. When I was in 10th grade, in my chemistry class, on the very first day, my teacher, Mr. Malcolm, he said something that stuck with me my whole life. He said, if you don't learn anything else in this class, and I did not, I want you to remember this one thing. And I remember writing it on the front of my little notebook and looking at it every day for the next year. He said, change is the only constant. And if you cannot accept change, you will quickly grow old.
Mm.
And I realized at that time, my first metaphysical teaching, which happened to be based in science, right? Is that change is the only constant, and you better learn how to roll with it.
Yeah. There was a book that one of my general managers gave me. He actually made it required reading, not so much to maintain employment, but it was just required. Please, I want you to read this so that we're all on the same page, or at least we all understand what the page is that, you know, that's talking about. And I believe the title of the book was Who Moved the Cheese or something like that.
Oh, yeah, they love that book.
Oh, yeah. And I read the book. Okay, I read it, and I said, look, I don't have a problem with people moving the cheese.
Right.
Just tell me that you're moving the cheese. I don't care if you move it from here to Tokyo or to Tipperary. Well, I prefer you move it to Tipperary, because that's where I want to go, is Ireland, and stay there for the rest of my life.
Nice.
Just tell me. I don't like booby traps. You know, don't pile stuff higher and deeper, and then I've got to come and open the door and it crashes down upon me. Tell me that it's piled higher. That's fine, as long as I know what I can expect. Change You're absolutely right. It is the constant in the universe. I also noticed. I'm sorry?
Embrace it.
Embrace it. I remember when I have had experiences throughout my career where when things begin to get calm and peaceful, I know some change is coming. That's like the warning sign to me. It could be little and it could be big. And in some instances, it has been where in 2005, I lost my job to a company that bought the station I was working for. And at that time, it was a progressive station. And a Christian consortium came in and bought it and switched formats over to Christian and let everybody go. And it was at that point that I realized, you know what, I could do something else, or not so much as far as getting out of radio, but I don't have to stay here in Phoenix. I could, my wife and I, we could move. Yeah. And of course, she quit her job the next day that I was laid off. And so we said, hey, well, let's do this thing, you know. Hey, and the next thing you know, okay, 10 years later, boom, here we are. So it's wonderful. You know, it's not always easy, but I think that I guess. And this is a hard one to embrace, I think. But if you can make, this almost sounds like an oxymoron, but if you can make change the norm.
Right. It is the norm.
You know, if you can embrace it in that context, then, you know, hey, you guess what? You get to flow along and be who and what you are.
Right.
Deborah Lindsay, I want to thank you so much for sharing this hour plus with us. And before we let you go.
Thanks.
I would like to invite you, if you ever find yourself out here in Santa Barbara on the central coast of California, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. It's just fascinating.
That's very nice of you.
What you're doing. And we encourage people to check out your websites. You have two of them, basically. And one of them is, of course, for the International Metaphysical University. It's INTERMU, I beg your pardon, METU. That's IN as in Nancy, TERM as in metaphysical, ETU.com.
It's supposed to be a shortcut for International Metaphysical University, but it didn't.
And
doesn't translate.
Well, you could probably
like internet,
Google.
But with an M and a U at the end.
Right. Well, you could probably Google International Metaphysical University, and boom, I think that it'll take you right there.
Right. I think they can also go to internationalmetaphysicaluniversity.com, and it will take them there, I think. I believe that.
Very cool. And also the online EFT certification.com. That's online EFT certification.com to get more information, continuing education in that regard as well. And I'm sure that the two are quite complementary. I know they're quite complementary.
Yeah.
And before we let you go in its entirety, as it were, and we'd love to follow up again in 2017, I have three final questions that I ask all my guests.
Okay.
And the first one is, who is Deborah Lindsay?
I'm a perfect child of God. Who are you?
I ask the questions. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I just want to help people be happy.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
You know, those are not like easy 2-second answers, right?
Well, you don't have to take 2 seconds. We have plenty of time.
I think that the purpose of life is just to have fun and to enjoy and to love and live and take care of each other. But I think that my work here has something to do with helping to raise the vibration of the planet so that we can turn it from being upside down to being right side up.
Well, Deborah Lindsay, I want to thank you again for joining us here on the program. You are, again, the president of the university, the International Metaphysical University. And again, we thank you so much for sharing your time and your story with us.
Thanks. I've enjoyed it.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.